Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We welcome you to the show. This is Monday. It's usually parent-teacher talk, but I'm not sure that we're going to have our parents and teachers that are normally with us on. We do already have a caller with their hand up. But it is Labor Day, September the 1st, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. We're honored once again. And the fact that it's Labor Day, everybody here is doing their work. There's lots happening with the intensive. We're in, I'm not even sure what day it is. I've kind of lost track of them. But we finish on Saturday, so we're well into a 16-day laws of living. Today being Monday, we've got until Saturday to complete. And there's just been a huge amount of work happening. Everybody's just been digging in and been a powerful, powerful experience so far. And I anticipate it's going to continue to move in that direction. And the major focus, of course, of the intensive is that law has nothing whatsoever to do with the rule of a superior, which is what kings would like you to believe. You know, we're the superior, we make the law, you better do it or else. And we're here to offer that that's not law at all. That has nothing whatsoever to do with law. Law is something that just happens. It requires no obedience. Gravity doesn't care, isn't involved, and doesn't change whether you like it or not, hate it or not, want it to be different. Gravity doesn't change whether you harmonize with it or, pun intended, step out of harmony. Step off a 2,000-foot cliff, law happens. No punisher, no knight. Just they're the way eternal forces operate. If we know how the eternal forces operate, then we get to consciously play within them and create all kinds of things, such as when you understand and harmonize with the law of gravity, you can build an airplane. Much, much heavier than air does the airplane violate the law of gravity, not for 1 second. And in fact, what we come to understand when we really understand law is that law is never broken. It's impossible to break a law. We can get broken when we come into avoidable collisions with the law, but law self-sustains not the least fracture. It is always intact. Somebody steps off a cliff, gravity has not been broken, damaged, injured in any way, but the person going down the side of the hill is certainly going to experience some collisions. And so when we come into those avoidable collisions, because we don't understand it, as we begin to understand that there are laws in every arena. You know, I use the example of if someone believes that the law for driving a car is that you sit on the dash, you hold the steering wheel, and you steer, and you look out the back window, that person's going to have a lot of trouble getting from point A to point B. There's going to be a lot of collisions and a lot of problems. People who don't know how to steer their own minds, nobody ever told them that there are laws by which that mind operates, by which emotions operate, by which the body operates. And the fact that nobody ever told them that there were, people don't understand them. They don't know how to harmonize with them. You and I harmonize with the law of gravity. If we get near a cliff, we stay back. It's just the way it is. We understand how it works. But when we get near a mind that is not in harmony with the law, we allow our minds to step out of harmony with how the mind is designed to be operated, and believe me, there is a design, then the same kind of trouble unfolds for the person who doesn't understand and doesn't know any better. And so our Laws of Living class is about coming to the point of understanding that and then stepping out of the generations and generations and generations of programming that didn't know that there were laws to harmonize with, that didn't know that there was a way the mind could be steered and directed so that it produces an awesome life. We're all designed to have an absolutely awesome life. And so that's kind of the focus of what we're doing. And you know, if you go back into the genius mind of that man named Yeshua 2,000 years ago, you know, he's popularly known as Jesus, but his name clearly was not Jesus, was not Hail Zeus, as the Greeks would have you believe. His name was Yeshua. And he, you know, when they said to him, all this law you're teaching us, what's most important? He said, have rachma. Now, the Greeks translate that as have love. The Greeks translate it as have love for God, for neighbor, and for self. Not what he said at all. In Aramaic, he used the word that refers to, and there's no such concept in the human language. There's not even anything that approaches that concept in the English language. You can't even talk about how to harmonize with the law of the mind without using paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs to come to understand what it's speaking of. We do have one little piece in our culture that hints at the, what should I say, because it doesn't hit it on the head, it just hints at the idea that rachma brings forward, that word that's been translated as love for God, for neighbor, and for self brings forward. And we say, you know, when we find Charlie in a bad mood, we say, Charlie got out of bed on the wrong side this morning. What we're saying is that Charlie has a filter active in his mind, and everything that passes through that filter, because he's looking through that filter, he finds irritating. Stay out of his way. Well, the same reference that term, Charlie got out of bed on the wrong side this morning, is precisely the reference of rachma. There is a filter in the mind, and the filter called rachma is a filter that allows your mind to only use intentions, which are stored in the frontal lobes of the brain, for raw material for your goals, and your goals are what drive your mind, drive your perception. Sounds like a very complex conversation to somebody in the beginning, and it is, because we've been brainwashed, we've been turned backwards. And we think, oh, who's making up these laws? Who's the one who's trying to control us? No, folks, it's been reversed. You've been controlled when you weren't told how it worked. You know, kings love stupid people. Kings love angry people. Kings love fearful people, because fearful, angry, stupid people make great slaves. And when people are angry and fearful, you know, one of the first questions Ginny will ask in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is, how many have ever done something that they regret? Now, obviously, if every time that we did something we regretted, our answer was the same, we'd say, maybe we're bumping up against an error here. Maybe if every time I did something that I regretted, my mind had this particular condition going on, then maybe that would help me to understand how to operate my mind, and maybe I shouldn't operate my mind when those conditions are present. Everybody's answer when we say, what were you feeling when you did what you regretted, is always hostility and fear, the lousiest fuel on the planet for the human mind. Guaranteed, your mind will be stupid. You'll do what you regretted. Now, if you observe that over the period of your life, you may be addicted to that hostility and fear, and it may be difficult for you to even start to have a different conversation than, well, that's how my father did it, that's how my mother did it, I watched my grandfather, if it's good enough for them, then it's good enough for me. Well, if you notice that every time you get in trouble, it's because you're in hostility or fear, you might want to start to notice that's a violation of the laws of the mind. The mind is designed to be fueled properly, like any other device. You know, I love to ask the question, how many have got a device in your home, your shop, your office, your car, that when you unplug it from its power supply, works really well? And there isn't such device. Mind in hostility or fear is unplugged from its power supply. Stop listening to it, because it always gives lousy, lousy advice. Restore that mind to Rachma, the active presence of love, and all of a sudden you'll have a properly functioning mind, and there will be intelligence and choice available. Otherwise, one just follows the decisions stored in the mind from the past and cuts themselves off from the human lives. It's just so practical when you realize that, and that there are patterns to be undone. And in our culture, the tool that describes how to undo the patterns has been turned backward. We've been told that the tool called forgiveness, which is how you remove from your mind conditions that don't belong there, data, information, feelings, thoughts that don't belong in your mind, that's forgiveness. It's a removal tool. We've been taught that forgiveness is about, no, Michael, you don't understand. The reason that I'm in pain, the reason I'm in this hostility or rage or guilt or grief is because of what they did. You see, it's all their fault. That's why I'm feeling this. So I'm going to be really big about it. You know, I went to church as a kid for many, many years, and they told me all I had to do was forgive. All I had to do was let them off the hook, so I'm going to go ahead and let them off the hook because there's hostility and fear in my mind. Well, good luck, folks. You've been conned. Forgiveness has nothing to do with letting other people off the hook because there are conditions active in your mind. Forgiveness is a tool with which you go in and remove the condition that's defiling your mind. It's part of the law. And when you have this condition called Rachma active, and it's coming into relationship with eternal forces that's required. Many people say, well, just give me a list of the laws. No, you come into an experiential relationship with these energetic patterns. And as you develop those energetic relationships, everything in your life changes. So that's what we're here to support. That's what we're here to support parents and teachers in engaging in with their children, rather than teaching their children that rage is the way to go and that, you know, that the kid's the problem in the world and it's all their fault that mom or dad is upset. We're here to stop and say, if you're in rage, if you're in guilt, if you're in fear, if you're in anger, if you're in sadness and you blame your child, you're violating the integrity of your mind and the integrity of their minds. Stop. Step back. Teach the child. Learn to function out of a mind based in love, and teach your child to live out of a mind based in love. That's the essence and the core of what Yeshua was teaching 2,000 years ago. And you'll remember that he spoke of the children. He said, suffer the little children to come unto me, for such theirs is such as the kingdom of heaven. And woe unto you who would defile one of these little ones, that is, who would puke on them with hostility or fear. Woe to you. You're in big trouble. He says, you know, it's better than a millstone to be put about your neck and to be dropped to the bottom of the sea than to defile one of those. And we defile with hostility and fear by modeling hostility and fear for our children, whether we're teachers, whether we're parents, created an insult to the integrity of their energy field. And of course, you know, the ancient teachings say there'll come a time when the whole world will be fooled, and you take a look around and most of the world does so much of what it does out of hostility or fear. And so when one recognizes and engages in changing that dynamic, they start to chip away the hostility and fear-based dynamics that were taught to them by their power person. Many people think they are exempt from the power person dynamic. Nobody's exempt. But until you can admit and own that you're living by that dynamic, it will remain in the dissociated mind and will control and run your life, and it'll be passed on to your children the same weaknesses, the same dynamics will be passed and passed and passed. Somebody in the bloodline has to get brave enough to embrace it. Somebody has to get brave enough to say, okay, I'm going to own this. I'm actually going to own this. I'm going to be responsible for this dynamic. I'm going to bring it forward in my mind consciously rather than keep it hidden and blame everybody else when I'm functioning out of it. So that's what we're here to support. And Jeannie, will you tell me, is Dr. Tim with us today?
No, he's not. It's very quiet both in the chat room and on the switchboard. We do have a hand up.
Well, let's say hello to our hand
being, up. I guess being a holiday, everybody is somewhere else. But our caller is area code 980. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. How are you, young lady?
Doing pretty good. My question is, I've gone through a divorce, but I can't seem to get rid of that anger and trying to move forward. Go ahead.
I hear you loud and clear.
Oh.
So, how long were you married?
13 years.
13 years, a long time. And how long have you been divorced?
Two.
Okay. Well, I'm going to invite you. What was your name?
Benita.
Benita. So I'm going to invite you to think back. When did you meet your former husband?
Maybe in the summer of 13 years prior, 15 years prior.
Okay, so the summer of 2001, 2002, something like that. So let's go back to the year 2000 before you met him.
Actually, it was probably the year before that because we were married in 2000.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go back to 1995.
Okay.
If you think back to 1995 and think about some conflicting things that were happening in your world at that time. Did you know the quality of anger that you're now experiencing and working on getting rid of in 1995?
Yes.
Yes. The answer is always yes. It's a given. So one of the ways to get rid of that anger is to stop and say to yourself, I think my anger's about my divorce, but I'm really lying to myself because I had this anger long before I was divorced. And what happens, you know, there's a cycle that we tend to go into, and the cycle is one, first of all, of denial. You know, the fact that you divorced me really makes me mad, is what, in that sort of circumstance, someone might say. And when I say to my former spouse, the fact that you divorced me really makes me mad, what I'm saying is, former spouse, you're the cause of my anger. And when I do that, because my own mind is the cause of my anger, I hide the part of my mind that causes my anger. We call it denial. Just thinking or speaking as though something outside of you is the cause of something inside of you. It's called denial. What happens when you deny is that you tell your mind, in essence, mind, you're not allowed to show me that this is mine. It's his, and boy, do I want to get rid of it. And you're now like you're driving a Ferrari with the emergency brake on. You want to get something accomplished, but the core of what you need to accomplish is hidden from you by denial. So when I instruct my mind that something outside of me caused my anger, then I dissociate from my anger. I hide it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So in hiding, I can't change it. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to project it. I'm going to make sure that everybody else knows it's their fault. The first step to healing that anger is going to be to put an end to your denial. Every time your mind thinks or every time you utter a word about how you know, Charlie made you mad, that girl at work made you mad, you know, the car wouldn't start this morning, that made me mad, my child's teacher did something inappropriate, that made me mad. Every time your mind thinks in terms of something outside of you causing your anger, stop and take responsibility. Huh, here I am in another circumstance where that old demon anger's hanging around once again, that old bugaboo of mine. I remember back in 1995 I had the same anger. In fact, I can go back to when I was, the first memory I have of that. Let's see, how old was I? What age were you the first time you remember experiencing that anger?
I would say maybe 93.
Okay, but what age were you?
I was in like my late 20s.
Late 20s. So the first time you experienced that quality of anger, you were in your late 20s. You never had it when you were 10. You never had that experience when you were 6.
Well, maybe like my dad and my mom were divorced. Well, my mom actually died, and so I went to go live with another family member, and so my dad would say he was coming to pick me up, and sometimes he'd show up, sometimes he would not. And so, of course, I would get disappointed, but I'd also get angry. And
right.
Until my surrogate or whatever you want to call her told me, you know what, sometimes, Benita, people don't always do what they say. So don't
right.
count on him showing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
So you can remember back to being a pretty small child and being stuck in anger.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that you can see that that anger pattern is yours, are you still interested in getting rid of it?
Yeah, I need to. I think it's hindering me from moving forward, not only in relationship-wise, but also job-wise, because
mm-hmm.
I don't know if the two are connected or not, but it's like I start working, and then, like, you know, with my last marriage, I started working, I had my kids, we have 4 kids, and then he says, okay, you can stop working, take care of the kids, because it's going to be too expensive, you know, for childcare, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I do that, but then he blames me for not being able to get back into the workforce like I once was.
Right. Right. And that brings anger up for you.
Right.
Being
blamed. And so, yeah. So here I am unemployed now. I'm wondering how I'm going to pay my rent. I ask him for help, and he's like, well, you know, I'm paying you child support. What are you doing with the money? Excuse me, but the rent is more than the child support. And I have utilities, and I have a car payment, and I have all this other stuff, and I'm, you know, something, there is some blockage. There is something that is not flowing the way that it's supposed to flow.
Right. I hear you loud and clear. And one of the keys to changing that flow is going to be forgiving your anger. Not forgiving him, not forgiving your dad, but you apply forgiveness to your anger to remove that condition from your mind. And so what I'm going to invite you to do is to go to our website, which is www.whyagain.org, and in the center of the page you'll see a bullseye. Click that bullseye, and that will open a whole series of links. The first link will be chapter 24 of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It explains the forgiveness process and the forgiveness worksheet process. The second link is the actual forgiveness worksheet itself. It's called Reality Management. So I invite you to download that chapter 24, give it a read, then download the worksheet. And then the next link, if you click it, it will take you to a whole series of radio shows where we walk somebody through how to remove things like anger, sadness, grief, rage, etc., from your mind. How to forgive that. So you'll need the worksheet in hand. And then, you know, that third link that will key you into, there are more than a dozen radio shows where you've actually walked somebody through step by step the whole process. I invite you to listen to one or two or three or all dozen or so of those shows and start to understand how that worksheet operates and go in and actually fill in the blanks. And I'd suggest that you perhaps do some worksheets around your husband. I'd suggest you do some worksheets around yourself. I'd suggest that you do some worksheets around work. I'd suggest you do some worksheets around dad. And what you'll find is each time you do one of those worksheets, you'll chip away another piece of your anger, another piece of your anger, another piece of your anger. And once you've chipped away sufficiently, you're going to find that that is going to stop being a controlling mindset in you. And part of the worksheet process is practicing the use of a different controlling mindset, which is what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, which was called rachma. Rachma was a word in Aramaic that represented a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that allowed the mind to be set in love rather than in hostility or fear, which is what kings want you to be in. In essence, kings want good slaves. You got to keep good slaves dumbed down, keep them in hostility and fear, and that's where they'll live. Free yourself from hostility or fear, and all of a sudden you're going to find a genius showing up in your mind that you never imagined you had, and it will simply become yours and become expressed. So that would be my prescription for you, and then as you start doing the worksheets, we would love to hear back from you. There are probably going to be questions. It reverses the way the world thinks about just about everything, but as you get to the core of that process, you're going to see some magnificent changes happen in your mind. Some of it may not make sense, and that's why we're here 5 days a week for this conversation. So as you look at it and begin to get acquainted, we'd be delighted to have you call back in and answer any questions that you've got about the worksheet. What doesn't make sense about it? How does this step work? This step doesn't make any sense. You get to the core of forgiveness from the original Aramaic language, and to the mind, it appears totally, completely, absolutely backward. This is really dumb. But the truth is, our mind has got it backward, blaming everybody else for what's inside of us. And so it takes the backward process, and it works in just the most awesome way.
Okay.
So that would be my intention for you. And as you unfold with that worksheet and practice with it, we would love to hear back from you and answer any questions, refinements, and give you all the support we possibly can.
Great. Thank you so very much.
Absolutely delighted. Nice to meet you, Benita. Where are you located, by the way?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte, North Carolina. Well, you know, I made a phone call to Charlotte, North Carolina yesterday, and I don't know whether I'm going to hear back from them. We were looking at perhaps doing the workshop series there. If not Charlotte, the 30th of November, it's not too far away. I don't know if it's possible. On 30th November, we're going to be doing a week-long series of workshops at Unity of Wilmington. We'll be doing their Sunday service on the 30th of November. Then Sunday afternoon, we'll be doing the main workshop we do on forgiveness. Why is this happening to me again? It's a free open workshop. And we'll do Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night. And they're all free workshops. And then Saturday, there is one workshop that we probably charge for. It's called Mind Shifters and Step Out Duty. So we'll be doing that one. So if you look on our website, you can check out that flyer. If anything does happen to occur and is added to the schedule, if you just keep an eye on the schedule on our website, you'll know about it. But you can download that flyer for Wilmington. It's not too far away, I don't think. And maybe you'll get to join us.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
So nice to meet you. Okay.
You
much
too.
Alrighty,
bye-bye.
Regina, do we have anybody else with a hand up or anything exciting happening in the chat room?
Nobody else has their hand up, and there's no questions in the chat room. So I had been jotting down things during the Laws of Living, so perhaps we'll address one of those unless you have a different direction to go.
Well, fabulous. No, I think that's a great idea, sweetie.
Okay. One of the first things, I went back to the beginning, so this was several days ago, but one of the things that kind of stood out for me, we were talking about infants and whether they form goals. And we know that infants, they haven't developed speech yet, and so they have a sensory link, more touch and smell and hearing and things like that. So then there was a question that if there is something that is integrated within us before we're 2 years old, before we start using words, then later in life when that's triggered, how can it be changed or moved out? Do we have to go back? Can you move it out then with words, or do you have to do something different?
Okay, good question. So the child experiences the world as energy, and one of the things that we're working to support people in having is an experience of themselves functioning as energy. And as we begin to experience ourselves as energy systems and we begin to experience the dynamics of life around us as energetic patterns, then things start to shift and change pretty dramatically. The child does not have the same kind of cognitive awareness related to words that the adult does, but it's interesting, you can take a child or an adult at 60 years of age, put them into an hypnotic state, and take them back to the day of their birth, and they'll tell you who was in the room, what mother's hairdo was, what the emotional state of everybody in the room was. The child is finding opinions, but not with words. It's making decisions, but not with words. And a lot of those decisions literally programmed into the structure through our genetics. That is, the patterned ways of looking at the world tend to be passed on from generation to generation. And so as an adult gets in touch with some of those deeper emotional experiences, that forgiveness worksheet process is a key core in the whole process of healing, as well as, you know, one of the other tools we teach is the still point breathing process. And still point breathing is a way to use the breath to open. If you watch, you know, think about the little child in there in trauma. Something just happened. What do they do? They're holding their breath, some of them literally till they turn blue. And what that is an effort. It is an effort not to feel what's locked in tissue. And so when you restore the breath, the energy that's been blocked by the holding of the breath all of a sudden becomes available and processes through. And so the invitation would be to learn the still point breathing process as an adult and begin to breathe through those experiences to let the energetic patterns go, as well as you can use that still point process with a small child, the smallest infant. You can take through that process and help them to let go of what never belonged within their structures. And the way to do that is to simply engage in the still point breathing process in the child's ear when they're in a relaxed, you know, maybe just prior to sleep. So the child's laying there and ready to go to sleep, being quiet. The adult can just very quietly entrain their breath with the child and just breathe in the child's ear with that still point breath. And the child will tend to go into the same pattern and literally brush out or wash out a lot of patterns that don't belong within the system. So that would be my take on, you know, the adult with those childhood patterns and the small child. You can take an infant that's been through a trauma and just take them through the still point process. And you know, where an adult usually takes an hour or so to go through a still point session, I've seen many times I've breathed young babies, small babies, and they'll be through it in a matter of 2 or 3 minutes. It's pretty awesome. So does that round out what your question was? Is there any other aspect to it, Tweety?
I think that's got that one. Let's see. There were some others.
When you're looking at one, I just moved out to the desk. I don't know how the sound of the phone is. I hope it's a little better. And it's interesting. It's actually, there's a chilly breeze. Here we are. It's the 1st of September, and we're getting a chilly breeze today. Sunny, beautiful,
well, actually,
blue sky. And, go ahead.
I hope the signal stays straighter. I was getting ready to tell you a moment ago that it sounded like you were cutting in and out, like you were moving or walking or something. So
okay.
Hopefully it'll be clearer out there.
Yes. Is it good now?
Yeah, right now it's fine.
Okay. Good, because I did walk from the kitchen out here in the middle of that answer, so that's probably what you're experiencing.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Our calling number, by the way, is 646-200-4169. If you have a question for us, we would be delighted to answer. And, Denise, I really appreciated your call and your questions and your willingness to be responsible and to move through those dynamics. And I hold the space for yourself, for your former, and for your babies to be able to heal around all of these dynamics that have shown up. I know that one of the things that we see a lot with children, in fact, I've never seen an adult from a divorced household that didn't think that in some way, shape, or form they were responsible for the divorce. And so that worksheet process, as you begin to understand it, I'm not sure what age your children are, but there are a series of worksheets on the website that simplify the process of forgiveness. There's a woman named Julie Haverstick who lives here at Heartland. She was an inner city school teacher in Dayton, Ohio, and over a period of a quarter of a century took these tools and developed them for children. You can go to the website and order her book, Healing Children, Loving Children, but with the fact that there's a fresh divorce in the household, now is an ideal time to support the children learning the forgiveness process, the skill of removing their pain, their self-blame. You know, most children watch a parent in pain, and they very deeply want to fix whatever is wrong for that parent. And so not having any idea what's going on for the parent, no idea of the dynamics and relationship and finances and just all the stresses and strains that we put ourselves under, the child, having no idea, really believes they should be able to fix that. You know, we've all watched the child go over and hug mom when mom was in tears or dad when dad was in tears and want to fix it, and the child finds they can't fix it. And there are four common things virtually everybody on the planet that I've ever run into has these four files, so to speak, in common. And that is that because when I was three and I watched mom in tears and I tried to fix it and I couldn't, I make up that I'm a failure. And then because I'm a failure, it must be my fault that mom's in pain because I should have been able to fix it. And now that I'm a failure and it's my fault, life, I start to make up ideas that life is just hopeless. And you kind of made reference to that, Danita, when you talked about your dad and how often you were disappointed and angry because he didn't keep his word. And what you made up in your mind at that time was a reality that people weren't reliable. And the tendency would be to behave out of that reality and tend to play out those dynamics of it's hopeless. You know, that's just the way people are. It's hopeless. That'll never change. And I'm helpless. So most people who tried to fix something for an adult ends up with files in their minds that I call hopeless, helpless, fault, and failure. And life is pretty tough to live if one's carrying those dynamics around with them. So we invite the opening of and the healing of those dynamics through the forgiveness process. And that's what Julie writes about in her book, Healing Children, Loving Children. And it is available on the website if you go to the catalog there. And you find this would be an ideal time, rather than your children trying to figure this out on their own, trying to gee, what do I do with this? I love my daddy. I love my mommy. They're fighting. Well, you know, what do I do with all of this? Teach the child to forgive. Teach the child to give up the reality that it's the child's fault, that the child's a failure. Teach the child to heal the belief that life is hopeless and that they're helpless. And that's all done through the forgiveness process. And Julie starts out with age-appropriate language for the kindergarten child and then goes right up into the teen years with language and introducing different concepts around the forgiveness process and how to do that worksheet. So there are 8 different worksheets in the book Healing Children, Loving Children for how to work children through, how to teach children and support them through the process of healing and giving them those skills. Because our culture isn't very good at giving kids skills for working through those things. And forgiveness is, I consider it to be the absolute most important skill to give anyone. Because without forgiveness, one has no way to remove what never belonged. When you think forgiveness, think removal rather than think let somebody off the hook. No. My mind is serving up a certain condition, there's nothing for me to forgive anyone for. Well, but Michael, they did a terrible thing. Shouldn't I forgive them? Well, okay, you know, I saw them. They did do a terrible thing, but you can't forgive them because forgiveness isn't about letting them off the hook. If you choose to pardon them, call what you're doing what it is, and that's pardoning. See, you did something crazy. I pardon you. And what you did brought a lot of pain up in me, so now I'm going to go to work and forgive my pain. I'm going to remove this capacity to produce this kind of pain, this kind of emotion, this kind of feeling that I don't like. That's the real forgiveness work. And, you know, Vladimir Lenin in his communist writings said the way to destroy a culture was change the meaning of its words. And that's what's happened. Forgiveness has been removed from was removed from planet Earth almost 2,000 years ago when they turned forgiveness into pardoning, letting other people off the hook. Change the meaning of the word, the tool disappeared. And so what we're experiencing today is a planet where, for at least 2,000 years, find me a culture that knows that forgive means remove. We were just in the Spanish culture this last year quite a bit. And the word in Spanish for forgive is pardon. Let them off the hook. Forgiveness was disappeared. And when forgiveness is disappeared, what happens is every drama, every trauma, every pain that comes into a human energy system is stored holographically in every cell in that energy system, including the sperm and the egg. So when you conceive a child tomorrow, that child would have in its structure every thought you've ever thought, every feeling you've ever felt, every pain you've ever engaged in is stored holographically in the child. We call them genetic disorders. But the feelings, the thought, the pain, and the trauma are the things that create the deterioration of the tissue that we call the genetically induced disease. We can do something about that. We can go in and access those energies in ourselves and remove them, and remove the genetic disorder. Now, there's not a lot of money in teaching people how to do that. There is a lot of money in, you know, giving people pills to try to deal with those things. But what we're offering is that you can develop a skill set, and it is a skill set that takes time to develop. You can develop the skill set to learn how to remove everything from your structure that never, ever belonged in your structure. And here are the things that never belonged in your structure. Rage, guilt, grief, fear, sadness, hatred, vengeance, gossip, slander, condemnation, negativity of all forms. It never belonged in us. It defiles our minds when it's active. And we're in trouble because we carry that around. We blame everybody else for it, and then we're told to forgive everybody else for it. Stop forgiving people. Go inside yourself. Forgive. Remove what never belonged. Pardon somebody if you will. That's a nice thing to do. But pardoning is not forgiveness. So, Jeannie, did you find a question for us? Or is there anybody with a hand up there?
I did, but now we have a hand up. So area code 417. we got to wait between talking, or we can't hear. We're on top of each other. But Magda, 417, you're on the air.
Hi there. How are you guys today?
Hey there, young lady. We're awesome.
Blessed. Wonderful.
And how are you feeling?
Well, I look forward to our class starting in just about 45 minutes. However, I want to ask you to explain something on the show today. I was working with someone in class yesterday who was dealing with feeling overwhelmed, and when she thinks she's in overwhelm, she then feels resistant. So can you speak about overwhelm and how we create that within ourselves? I think it fits in beautifully, of course, with the laws of living. So
yes,
would you do that,
really,
please?
Say it again.
Oh, would you just please talk about how we create overwhelm for ourselves and what it's really about?
Yes. Great topic. So, overwhelm, when you think in terms of energy, overwhelm is moving more energy that's been stimulated through the system than we're used to dealing with. And oftentimes, it's part of the healing process, and along with the overwhelm comes confusion. The reason for that is because when we allow ourselves to touch into things that we've been hiding from ourselves, and sometimes these are dynamics that we've hidden, not just from ourselves, but our generations have been hiding these things for centuries, literally centuries, and they're stored within us. And so if you open a file in the mind that holds, you know, generations of rage, guilt, grief, fear, or pain, then part of the healing of that, part of the opening of that space, and part of what one will have to move through will be the overwhelming energy of a thousand generations that have carried that particular pattern. And so it isn't always easy. It isn't always Dr. Feelgood, and of course that's one of the reasons we have the still point breathing process, because the still point breathing process will assist one in moving through and letting loose of the overwhelm so that one can function consciously in the presence of deeper, normally hidden energies passing through the system and being released. Does that fit for you? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. That's a really nice aspect of it that I hadn't been aware of, I think, before. And I was thinking, too, about how we overwhelm having to do with goals. too many goals.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the things that the culture doesn't teach us, which, of course, we're spending a lot of time talking about in laws of living, is that goals are the cause of stress. And every time that I set a goal in my mind, I create a stress in my mind. And if I set more goals than I can handle in this particular waking period right now, then what's going to tend to happen is my mind is going to go into so much stress that it will shut down, literally. You know, if anybody's ever procrastinated, you know, I've asked this a question of lots of people. How many of you have ever procrastinated? You know, if people will put their hand up. Say, now, notice that the days when you procrastinate are days when your to-do list is so long that you'll never get it done. And everybody shakes their heads and goes, how did you know that? Because procrastination comes from the mind crashing very much like a computer, because it's overwhelmed with stress. The culture hasn't told us that the way we create stress is by creating a goal. Every goal held in the mind creates a stress. And you know, you wouldn't know it from the way the Greeks translated, but if you go back to the original Aramaic, you hear Yeshua making the statement, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. And you wouldn't know in a million years that that was about stress management. And that word evil can be properly translated as unripened or incomplete. And what he's saying in that case is that don't have any more goals in your mind than you can handle and complete within the next waking period. And if you only set goals for things you can comfortably do in this particular waking period, then you will have a manageable level of stress in your mind. If you have more goals set in your mind than you can possibly do, it's very much, a good analogy is, it's very much like having a computer and you've got every program on the computer open. You've got 50 different programs and you open them all. When one program is open, the computer runs along very nicely and does its job and, you know, just rocks. You open two programs, it's doing pretty well. You open three, it's still doing well. You open 10 programs and things start to slow down. You open 20 programs and all of a sudden the computer is going into overwhelm. It can't handle all the energy. It doesn't have the resources to process everything that's open. And so that's where Yeshua offered that genius piece of advice is, don't set any more goals than what you can handle in the next waking period. And when you do that, then you will have all of your resources available and be more capable of working through what it is that you need to work through. And so that's why we introduce at the beginning of every workshop that we do the reality management sheet or the forgiveness process, because forgiveness is about removing stress by canceling goals. And it all ties together in such a magnificent way. And so when one cancels the goal to get anything done that isn't reasonable to get done before they go to sleep that night, by doing so, they reclaim their resources. It's like shutting down, you know, 80% of the programs on the computer. All of a sudden, you get your resources back and the computer's functioning.
How's that feel?
Yeah. That's great. That's great. When you were talking about procrastination, it reminded me of another question that had come up for me around procrastination. And that is that I'm not sure how it fits with goals. I'm just aware that what I procrastinate is about is the job or the task that I'm not really sure I know how to do. Well, that's not true. I know how to do, but it seems overwhelming because it's too big. So I see, I just talked myself into how it does relate to goals.
Yeah. So what I would suggest is that whatever that task is that seems so overwhelming, that you use the worksheet that we introduced yesterday, and actually I'm going to be bringing down a new version of it, a simpler version of it to the class today. Jeannie and I have worked on it and simplified it significantly. But I'd suggest you take that goal, that plan that you have that's too big to handle, and you put it on your planning sheet, and then you simply focus on what aspect of this can I handle today?
If
the example I usually use is when Jeannie was going to school, she didn't do everything that she needed to do to walk across the stage and get her degree the first day that she applied for school. If she had and had taken on the enormity of all the things she was going to have to do, it would have been overwhelmed. But the plan is graduate in 3 years. Today's goal is I get my application in. Well, but I want to get my books too. Well, wait a minute. I haven't even selected my classes. I can't get my books. If I try to set a goal to get my books when I haven't even determined what my classes are, obviously my mind's going to go into overwhelm. So I set the goals that I choose to accomplish according to what and only what I can do today about those goals. And that way, I keep my stress at manageable levels instead of that overwhelm. And, of course, there is also, when one's in the healing process, a part of the overwhelm is that genetic component starts to move, and that can get pretty intense. And it's just part of the process. That's one of the reasons for doing it at Heartland, where you've got space and the support for doing it. And also that's one of the reasons for moving into the still point breathing process. So how's that fit for you? Are you still with us?
Okay. I think I was on mute.
Oh, okay.
I did Michael right, but I was on mute.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, that does fit so well. That's perfect. I see it very clearly now. And I want to also agree with you that being at Heartland is such a marvelous experience because there is all the support from everyone there for each other, and the energy of the place itself and the energy that we create being together and having the willingness to do our work is tremendous. So I would invite anyone who's considering coming to Heartland next summer for intensives or any of the other intensives you're doing around the country through the year, go for it. Really, really, really go for it. It's worth it.
Yay.
Cool.
Okay, well, I will see you at 1:30 for class.
All right, see you then. Blessings.
Thank you so much. Blessings to you. Bye-bye. Cool.
Great discussion. Great. Thank you for those questions. It definitely
mm-hmm.
helps to move the energy of the show forward when we have live, honest-to-goodness, real questions. So, Jeannie, we have anybody else with a hand up, or do you have another question in the queue from class yesterday?
Sorry, nobody else has their hand up. So one of the things was we were talking about kind of a twofold thing. We were talking how our goals come from our active intentions. And so you may have to explain that a little bit for the listening audience. But one question was, okay, so does that mean there are other intentions there that are inactive? And so then the goals come from the active intentions. So that's the first part of the question. And then we talked about how the soul is designed to be the ultimate one to set our goals. And if the mind sets the goals, then it usurps the soul. And so that got a little bit confusing there, but it's like then we have to manage our mind indirectly. So if you can address those two things, well, I guess you can't. We've only got 2 minutes. So pick one of them.
Okay, let's do that. Well, let's preserve those questions for tomorrow. That'll be great. And in the meantime, the mind can only be managed through indirection. And I always use the example, and so we'll keep it short under the 2 minutes. And that is that the room is hot and I want the temperature to go down. Now, the technology is coming in where I could just say temperature go down. But at this point, you can't just say, or the average person can't just say temperature go down, direct the air conditioner directly. You can't do it. And it's the same thing with the mind. There is a control, a device for controlling, a tool for temperature at which the air conditioner runs. It's called a thermostat. There is a tool, a device for controlling your mind, and it's called managing your goals. And so tomorrow we'll open the show and talk about my goal management a little bit. We'll continue with that question. If you'd hold that in awareness, sweetie, that would be nice. And otherwise, we're down to the last few seconds. I'm going to have to close the show out. We do have St. Louis. The 14th of the month, we'll be in St. Louis doing Why Is This Happening to Me Again, a free open workshop at Washington University. Then we'll be out in Dr. Tim's territory in Woodstock, Illinois, doing a full week of workshops there. And then we head to Grand Rapids, Michigan, doing a week there, and then a Spiritual Unity of Nations conference that we're going to be keynoting. All this is on the website. We'll be doing a week in Lansing. And we have a 9-day codependence. We decided to do codependence to interdependence. It'll start on the 31st. It'll be a fall colors intensive in northern Michigan, absolutely beautiful place that we've got. to do a 9-day codependence to interdependence intensive, and that will start on the 31st of October if anybody's interested in joining us for that. And then we'll be heading to Florida off in April. We've got a teacher training that we'll be doing, a 9-day Y and a teacher training, so there's lots on the schedule. We'll be all over Florida. We'll be in Wilmington, North Carolina, the end of November, so come and join us. We appreciate you. Have a blessed day. Create the best duty out of your eternal life, and bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Blessings.